The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com: Meet Bugonia star Aiden Delbus, the 19-year-old actor redefining autism representation. This article was written by Juan Velasquez on December 31, 2025. 2025 has been a whirlwind for Aiden Delbus, the 19-year-old Southern California actor suddenly thrust into the spotlight after making his film debut in Bugonia, opposite Emma Stone and Jesse Plemons in Yorgos Lanthimos's conspiracy thriller. Cast right before his 18th birthday, Delbus, who is on the autism spectrum, got his start in high school productions of Dracula and Almost Maine, and as a cast member of the Miracle Project, an LA-based inclusive program for theater and film. One might assume that being plucked from relative obscurity to the big screen would be a jarring or unmooring experience, but Delbus approaches his newfound success with a steady, confident ease. I don't know exactly how I feel about a lot of how things have happened. It's certainly exciting and interesting, Delbus tells Teen Vogue via Zoom from his family home in an LA suburb, his cat Oreo on his lap. I'm probably experiencing a bunch of emotions that I likely haven't totally processed yet. In Bugonia, Delbus plays Dawn, the quiet, earnest, and sweet autistic cousin to Plemons' character, Teddy. The duo is bound by blood and an important mission, one that makes more sense to Teddy than Dawn. The cousins kidnap girl boss CEO Michelle, played by Emma Stone, whom they believe is an alien out to destroy humanity. Dawn becomes the emotional anchor of Bugonia's bleak, violent narrative, offering a human counterbalance to Michelle and Teddy's escalating ideological fury. Dawn has the most fresh and more unbiased perspective of them all, and often the most pure, Delbus says. Dawn has a natural sense of empathy, which offsets Teddy's prickly demeanor and makes the audience less likely to brush Teddy off as a complete nutcase, as Delbus puts it. And, based on the screening I saw, people fall for Dawn instantly. He's a fan favorite from the jump. The young actor identifies with Dawn in some ways. I can be fairly quiet and awkward in my own right, albeit maybe not as much so. But Delbus says that he's not as much of a pushover and would have rebelled a bit against his tyrannical cousin if he was in the same position. He admits he's got a bit of a rebellious streak. There's something about Don's struggles that I think felt familiar to me, Delbus says. In school, I experienced some pretty similar feelings. High school math and chemistry classes were very confusing and rough for me. Delbus' connection to Dawn isn't just about their similar struggles and shared awkwardness. His personal interpretation of the film is shaped by the same empathy and optimism that makes his character so lovable. Like most Yorgos Lanthimos films, Bugonia is quite dark and nihilistic in some respects, but Delbus dug out the softer core of the movie. Perhaps we as a society are too harsh on those who think about the world in their own unique ways. The world has not always been kind or open-minded towards neurodivergent people, he says. He is careful not to overstate the impact of his autism in his professional and artistic life, and he only really talks about it when it's brought up in interviews. Delbus clarifies that he finds it amusing more than annoying or intrusive, but he does struggle a bit to answer those particular types of questions. "I didn't think about my autism much while working on the film," he says. "I also don't think I'm really quite as conscious in general how being autistic even impacts my work." But Delbus does have an opinion about the representation of neurodivergence in film. Although Don was not originally conceived as an autistic character, the film does not explicitly label or call attention to neurodivergence, allowing it to exist simply as an aspect of his character and not a defining trait, which Delbus says he finds preferable over it being drudged up too often, or the characters being treated as more of a stereotype of autistic or neurodivergent people. As is the case for both the character he portrays and in his own life, he is not defined by a diagnosis. It's part of his story, but not the whole thing. Delbus, above all, doesn't want to be pigeonholed to only playing autistic characters simply because he is on the spectrum. True to that outlook, his autism wasn't something he thought about much on set either. When he talks about any difficulties during filming, it's more about being uncomfortable running around in a hot AF, oversized suit than anything related to his autism. "I was worried that one of Emma's heels might end up smacking me on the head," he chuckles, reminiscing on film the kidnapping scene in the movie. But that same stretch of filming also holds one of his favorite memories. Right after the abduction scene, Teddy and Don share a small, goofy celebration, a rare pause in the film's chaotic pace, and Delbus lights up, describing how much fun it was to play that moment with Plemons. A debut as high-profile as Begonia would be cause for loud celebration for many, but Delbus holds his success differently, a calm, private satisfaction, far from boastful. In the short time since the wide release of the film and this interview, Delbus says he hasn't heard too much feedback from his friends, though one of his pals from high school told him, "That S was bananas." And he has enjoyed watching audiences' reactions to a very particular part of the film towards the end, but he doesn't want to give any spoilers. You'll have to watch to find out. With the film receiving a recent Golden Globes nomination, it doesn't seem like his Hollywood roller coaster is slowing down anytime soon. And while he is still processing this magical experience, he does seem sure of one thing. "I think filming Begonia made me want to stick with doing acting stuff for the foreseeable future, and perhaps to even try and make a career out of it." In the meantime, his newfound spotlight hasn't changed his day-to-day life very much. He's still a teenager who enjoys playing basketball, listening to Green Day, a bit of a callback if you've watched the film, and watching YouTube videos, one of his favorite pastimes. It's not to say he's not thinking about his next moves. "I think that my main goal as an actor at the moment, it's just to keep on doing interesting things," he says. "Be able to do roles that are not boring, whatever the scale of them may be." And judging from his personal taste, he names Jack Nicholson and Vincent Price among his favorite actors, though he says he's now a die-hard Jesse Plemons fan. It's highly unlikely Delbus will take on anything too boring. It's his interest in character-driven performances that got him the role to begin with. He submitted a video of himself performing Price's monologue from Michael Jackson's Thriller music video, which caught the eye of the Begonia casting director. Delbis is not just obsessed with the spooky camp of Price. He's an avid horror fan who cites A Nightmare on Elm Street as one of his all-time favorites. And he'd love the chance to play a movie monster someday. It would be wish fulfillment, since he missed his chance to play Dracula in his high school production. I definitely think it would make my inner teenager very happy to get to play Dracula or some other vampire figure in a project one of these days, he says. Fingers crossed. Consider this your notice, Hollywood. Aiden Delbis is ready when you are. Our next article from TeenVogue.com, Why Heated Rivalry Isn't Nominated for Golden Globes 2026. This article was written by Crystal Bell on January 11th. The success of Heated Rivalry isn't measured in awards validation so much as it is in social media timelines and group chats. Heated Rivalry breakouts Connor Story and Hudson Williams are headed to Golden Globes 2026 as presenters, not nominees. They're also, by most accounts, the people everyone wants to talk to and snap a pic with. One scroll through Gracie Adams' Instagram grid makes that clear. The stars of Heated Rivalry have become fixtures of awards season weekend, floating through pre-Globes parties as the kind of breakout actors whose faces are suddenly everywhere. Your favorite celebrity's current obsession. Tonight at the 83rd Golden Globes in Los Angeles, they'll attend the ceremony, likely seated alongside Paul Mescal, Jesse Buckley, and Charlie XCX, a star-studded detail that underscores just how quickly they've been absorbed into the norm. It's a surreal position, embraced by one of the industry's biggest nights before it even begins, for a show that was never eligible to be honored there in the first place. Why Heated Rivalry Isn't Eligible for Golden Globes TV Awards. Even though Heated Rivalry met the Golden Globes eligibility window, it ultimately isn't eligible for awards consideration because of where and how it was produced. Heated Rivalry is a Crave original, produced for the Canadian streaming service owned by Bell Media. Under Golden Globes television rules, that classification matters. The Globes consider shows produced primarily outside the United States to be foreign programs, which are not eligible for television awards unless they meet a very specific exception. They must be a bona fide co-production between a U.S. partner and a foreign partner, both financially and creatively, established before production is completed. In other words, a U.S. company has to be in the room early, putting money in, shaping creative decisions, and participating as a true production partner. Simply airing a show in the U.S. isn't enough. That's where Heated Rivalry runs into a hard stop. HBO didn't come on board until after Heated Rivalry Season 1 had already wrapped. By that point, the series was fully finished, with no opportunity for HBO Max to serve as a co-financier or creative collaborator. Instead, the platform functioned solely as the show's U.S. distributor. While it's an important role for the gay hockey romance's visibility, it's not one that satisfies Golden Globe's eligibility requirements. Because Heated Rivalry is a Canadian-produced series, without that qualifying U.S. co-production structure, it falls outside the Golden Globes' television eligibility rules. Even though it otherwise checked every box fans might expect, including timing and buzz. In short, it wasn't disqualified for when it premiered, but for where and under what production framework it was made. The distinction might sound technical, but it's foundational to how awards bodies define what counts as television within their jurisdiction. Distribution does not equal production. A hit can stream in the U.S., trend on social media, enter the cultural conversation, and still be ineligible if its production framework doesn't meet the rules. It's also worth noting how the Golden Globes operate more broadly. Nominations and awards are determined by an independent body of international journalist voters. The controversial HFPA no longer votes on or administers the Golden Globes. But eligibility itself is governed by strict criteria around financing, creative control, and productive origin. Those rules do not bend based on audience demand or cultural impact. So, while heated rivalry may feel like it belongs in the awards conversation, and in many ways, culturally, it does belong, its absence from Golden Globes contention isn't a snub. It's a structural reality of a Canadian-produced series without a qualifying U.S. co-production, no matter how loudly fans might root for it. And, according to a December report from Variety, that might be the case for Heated Rivalry Season 2 as well. HBO content chairman and CEO Casey Bloys told The Trade, "We are not going to be involved. I think the last thing the show needs is people meddling in what works. So I don't feel any need to weigh in. Clearly, they've got a good sense of the show and what works." Why Heated Rivalry Works. The success of Heated Rivalry isn't measured in awards validation so much as it is in social media timelines, group chats, and late-night scrolls. Since its premiere, the series has sparked a hyper-engaged fandom that lives online. Spicy TikTok edits set to yearning pop tracks, screenshot threads dissecting micro-expressions, fan art and fanfics filling in emotional gaps between episodes. Story and Williams, a.k.a. HudCon, have become the faces of that obsession, with both actors seeing their profiles surge almost immediately in the show's aftermath. That fandom energy has spilled decisively offline. Story recently became the unexpected center of gravity at a Chanel party in Los Angeles, where celebrities reportedly lined up to meet him. In New York, Williams was greeted with near boy band level fervor outside of The Tonight Show. Together, their rise shows why heated rivalry works for fans. Strong chemistry, emotional intimacy, and stars who feel discovered, not manufactured. Awards rules may exist on paper, but heated rivalry is thriving in the spaces that actually shape pop culture now. And that's bigger than any gold-plated trophy. Our next article from the teenmagazine.com, Why I Don't Believe in New Year, New Me. This article was written by Brianna Krobach on January 6th. As each year comes to a close, my social media feeds blow up with posts saying, "New Year, New Me." For many, this means pledging to change themselves overnight with new habits, routines, diets, workouts, basically resetting their whole identity. People swear that this year will finally be their year, ready to commit to a dramatic glow-up and rebrand their lifestyles as soon as the clock strikes midnight. The idea sounds motivating at first, and it's easy to buy into. But what people don't realize is that the pressure to turn your life around all at once is exactly what makes the trend unsustainable and toxic. The dark side of the trend. Don't get me wrong, I'm all for self-improvement and often encourage it. But it comes to a point where it's just too much, and New Year, New Me takes it to a whole new level. First of all, it's simply unrealistic. The whole point of New Year, New Me is to completely reinvent and become the best version of yourself overnight. It encourages all or nothing thinking. Either you somehow become this new person, or you're a failure. This is why most resolutions fail in the first place. Because when we set goals that are too big and too immediate, it becomes almost impossible to follow through with them. This applies to teens specifically. We already have school and extracurriculars. How are we expected to wake up at 5 a.m., hit the gym for 2 hours every day, get perfect grades, and somehow still get 8 to 10 hours of sleep without getting burned out? That brings me to the next point. Burnout is basically inevitable. There's so much pressure, especially from social media, to transform and reinvent ourselves. This leads to people setting strict rules and routines for themselves. What if you lose motivation entirely and you can't meet those high standards? What if you had a bad day at work or school and you don't have the energy for them? Even though this is completely normal, social media discourages it, leading people to think they're too lazy or need to be more disciplined. This trend forgets that burnout isn't failure. It's just the predictable result of unrealistic expectations. New Year, New Me also encourages harmful messages. The trend pushes people to change themselves because who they are now isn't good enough. But it's not just you. Your body isn't enough either. Weight loss is one of the most common New Year's resolutions and one of the most unhealthy. About 20 to 25% of people who try to lose weight are at risk of developing an eating disorder, according to Equip.com. This pressure is even worse for teens, and many restrict their eating and exercise more to avoid gaining it, according to National Eating Disorder Association. When improvement focuses on shrinking or changing your body, it's no longer improvement, it's harm. At this point, you're not just forced to become a whole new person, but also damage your body and mental health, too. So, if New Year, New Me does more harm than good, what's a better and healthier alternative? What to do instead? Now that we know the issue with the trend, it's easier to come up with better solutions. We need something that is easy to stick to, won't cause burnout, and doesn't encourage transformation or extreme diet/weight loss culture. Over the last few years, I tried out multiple alternatives that are more sustainable and encourage healthier thinking without ditching goals completely. Here's what worked for me and might help you too. Don't reinvent, Refine. Instead of changing yourself and your habits completely, try refining the ones you already have. Think about which ones are working and which ones aren't. Keep the ones that benefit you and gently adjust the ones that don't. Slow growth. Rather than reinventing yourself overnight, gradually changing over time is a healthier and less stressful alternative. Instead of having rigid habits like work out every day for 2 hours, change it to something that's realistic for you and easy to be consistent with, like work out 3 to 4 times a week for 20 to 30 minutes. Learn to value consistency over intensity, and you won't burn out. Focus on your priorities. Think about what you want to achieve this year. From there, you can easily decide what deserves your time and energy, then create habits that support those values. This way, you can still make resolutions, but focus on changing your habits to achieve it, not yourself. These strategies teach people that you don't have to become an entirely new person overnight to make this year your year. You can just pick your priorities, refine your habits, and let yourself grow slowly. The takeaway: the New Year, New Me trend encourages all-or-nothing thinking, burnout, and setting unrealistic standards, especially for teens. You don't need to change yourself to make this year a good one. Real growth doesn't come from transforming into someone else overnight, but from refining your current habits, making small and consistent changes, and focusing on what truly matters to you. This year, skip the rebrand and allow yourself to grow at your own pace. Happy New Year! We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.